This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource of pilots and aircraft owners.
Hi, this is Mary Grady for AvWeb. Today I'm talking with Mark Van Honecker, a pilot for British Airways, who's written a book about what it's like to spend time in the front seat of a 747. The book just came out this week in the U.S. market, and it's been getting great reviews. Aviation writer Jim Fallows from The Atlantic called it a beautiful work that captures the magic of seeing the world from above. Okay, Mark, well, thanks for talking to us today. And I guess to start out, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got around to being a pilot?
Well, I had a slightly delayed or convoluted journey to my current job. I was always obsessed with airplanes when I was a kid. My bedroom was full of model airplanes. I was always asking to go to air shows with my dad. But there weren't any pilots in my family. I didn't have an uncle or aunt who was a pilot. I didn't have a neighbor who was a pilot. And so it never really occurred to me as a possible career. And I think it was something that I almost thought it seemed almost like it couldn't be a real job. It seemed as ludicrous as being an astronaut does to some kids, I think. And so I went along other tracks. I went to college. I went to grad school. And then I decided I really did want to become a pilot in my mid-20s or so. And I needed to save some money for that. And I also wanted to fly as much as I could while I was doing that. And the intersection of those two needs was turned out to be consulting. So I worked for a management IT consultancy in Boston. One of the reasons I liked that company was that their office was on Atlantic Avenue. So you had a great view of Logan Airport right across the harbor. And so I got to fly a lot for work and watch the planes while I was working on my presentations. And in the meantime, I was looking at various routes to going into flying. And British Airways had a cadet program, which they've recently restarted, actually. So I applied for that. And I was put through their training course, which was based near Oxford in England, which they sent us then to Arizona for a lot of our visual flight training. And then in 2003, I started on the Airbus A320 series, so flying 319s and 320s and eventually 321s on European routes from London. And then in 2007, I switched to the aircraft I dreamed of flying when I was a kid, which is the 747.
So you actually just applied. You didn't have any flying experience when you went to work for the airline?
Well, I had taken lessons. I had taken lessons in high school and then again in college. But I never had the money to push all the way through for my ratings. And, you know, that's something a lot of listeners may be familiar with is, you know, you really do need a chunk of cash to sort of plow through. And if you can't maintain that, you know, if you can't maintain those hours and those ratings, then you get knocked back each time something expires. So I had been in small planes. I probably had 30, maybe 30 hours, but I'd never had the ability to financially just to follow through. And that of course was is something a lot of people will be familiar with. And it's one of the advantages of the European style or Asian style cadet programs that really help you out that way.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure, like you said, it's a familiar story to a lot of people in aviation. And so is that unusual for a British airline to hire an American guy?
It's slightly unusual. I was very lucky because my father was from Belgium, so I have a European Union passport, which takes away the main obstacle to getting onto those courses. There are, at British Airways, there are a few other pilots with an accent like mine. There's quite a few Dutch pilots, and there are pilots from other European countries as well. When I was a kid, if you had asked me what airlines I would have liked to have worked for, I would have said Pan Am or British Airways. I was really obsessed with these sort of icons of aviation. Most of my models were either Pan Am or BA that I assembled. And when I applied to BA, they still had Concorde. They had the world's largest fleet of 747s. And now, of course, we have 777s, 787s, A380s, A350s coming down the road. So it's really, I feel very lucky to be there.
So what inspired you? How did you come up with this, you know, conviction that I need to write a book about this?
Well, I wanted to write, you know, skyfaring to show what I love about my job, really. When I was a kid, I was able to go up into the cockpit of aircraft during flight, and that's not really possible anymore. And the book is really my attempt to share with, you know, with family and friends and readers what it's like to fly a long haul airliner. I think it's just an extraordinary, you know, airplanes are an extraordinary technology we've kind of forgotten because they're so good at what they do. We forget what a wonder it is to be able to take flight. And I wanted to remind people of that. And I also wanted to remind myself of it. You know, we get used to the things we do all the time. They become ordinary by definition. I wanted to remind myself really why I wanted to do this and what's so amazing about it. And for me, one of the ways to do that was to, you know, write down what it is I do love about it.
Yeah, well, it's certainly true. I mean, people have taken for granted and just gripe about, you know, having to fly in an airliner. And when you see people who don't even look out the window, it is kind of, you know, it's such an amazing thing to be able to do.
One good way to reimagine how amazing it is to watch children. If you go to a terminal like Terminal 5 at Heathrow with those enormous multi-story floor-to-ceiling glass windows, you know, the kids are staring out those windows. And, you know, there was a time in which terminals were built where you didn't really see the airplane. I mean, I don't know if you remember like the old Pan Am terminal at JFK. I mean, you could actually get on a plane without seeing it. And now the way airports are designed, they're designed to reconnect you with the sight of the airplane. I think the plane on the ground is a really interesting, you know, I mean, you just look at it and you think that weighs 380 tons and it's going to go across the world. It's going to fly. Another way to think about it is sometimes I try to imagine when I'm flying as a passenger, you know, if the plane didn't go anywhere at all, if all it did was take you up there and then take you back to where you started, you know, how popular flying would be. We would do it just because it was a wonder, just because we get a chance to look down on clouds rather than up at them. You know, if you think about it that way, then it's a good way for me to remember, you know, what's so amazing about it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and I think not only has some of the romance gone out of being a passenger, but sometimes it seems like some of the romance has gone out of being a pilot even. Do you feel that in your career? I mean, is it hard to maintain that sense of this is a great job, or do you think there's still a lot of, does that still exist? I mean, do most people who are doing that job still think that they've got the best job in the world?
I don't think I've ever met a pilot who's told me he's regretted his career choice or her career choice. I don't think that's ever happened to me, and that's pretty that's pretty good. Yeah. And you know, sometimes people say to me, you know, people often ask a pilot if that's something you always wanted to do. It's one of those questions you always get when people find out you're a pilot. And I think that's a really interesting question. I mean, I don't think there are many professions where that's the most natural question to ask about it, but people always ask me that first, or almost always. And I think that really implies how, you know, how flying is a dream, you know, has been a dream for all, I mean, for us as a species. And so it's very natural that we'd have that bug, you know, as a kid. One of the nice things that's happened with writing the book is that I've gotten a lot of letters from retired pilots. You know, they're writing to me and saying, they write to me and they list the aircraft that they flew over this very long career. Some of the aircraft types I don't even recognize. I have to go look them up. And, you know, and they're looking back on a career with a kind of nostalgia and romance that I don't think is all that common in the working world these days. So I think that feeling is, you know, is still there among my colleagues. And you know, of course, for me to write it down was one way of rekindling it for myself, at least. One of the nice things that's happened with the book is not only have I gotten those letters from retired pilots, but I've gotten a whole bunch of emails from kids, from teenagers or people, you know, 11 or 12 years old. And, you know, they're reading the book, or they're reading their parents' copy of the book, which kind of surprised me. I mean, I wasn't writing for that age group, but they are, you know, all talking about how much they want to be a pilot and how it's been their dream since they were kids. One of the nicest things about those letters is that there's a very even gender split, about half are girls and half are boys. And for me, that's a really good sign for the future of the profession, that the, you know, the current gender imbalances in the cockpit will be evened out over time, and that there'll be a, you know, finally that career will draw from the full, you know, the full potential of the population.
Yeah, that's great. Now, were there authors who inspired you? Like you said, you didn't really know anyone who was a pilot. Were there books that you read that made you think that this was what you wanted to do?
I liked a lot of sort of kids' books. Jonathan Livingston Seagull, of course. And as I got a little older, I, I came into books that were more specifically about aviation. I really like Out of Africa, which isn't really a book about flying, but there's a passage, there's about half of a chapter near the end, which is about the author discovering flight the first time, really. And of course, that's evoked so well in the film as well, in the Out of Africa movie with Meryl Streep and Robert Redford. And, you know, that it's, they're clearly awakening to a new way of seeing the world. And that's something that I found very beautiful then. There was another, there's another book by Beryl Markham called West with the Night, which is a great book. She was actually a friend of the author of Out of Africa in Africa, in Kenya. And she was the first woman to fly, I believe she was the first woman to fly from east to west across the Atlantic. And then, of course, I always liked Ernest Gann's Fate as the Hunter, which is, it's just a remarkable book to read. You know, it was written so long ago, but so many of the so many aspects of the profession haven't changed. For example, the you know, the seniority-based system, which determines, you know, where and when you fly. You know, whether you're going to be working on Thanksgiving or whether you're going to be working on, you know, midweek. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a, you know, we think of aviation as so driven by modern technology, but you realize that it does have its heritage and its traditions. And that book is one of the best examples of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, there's quite a library out there, and now there's one more book in that library for people to read and find out what it's really like to be a pilot and what it's like up there in the world above the surface.
Yeah, I hope that anyone who likes flying will enjoy the book, but even more so, I hope that people who don't necessarily enjoy flying but feel that, that they have to do it because it's how they, you know, make the trips to new places they want to see, or it's how they see their family, or it's how they work. I hope that, you know, those people who may not have a natural love of flying but have to do it anyways, you know, if someone in that situation, you know, enjoys the view of a 747 a little more because of the book, or if they ask for a window seat that they might not have otherwise asked for, then that would make me really happy.
Okay, well, thanks very much. And so if our listeners are interested in finding your book or reading your book, where would they go for more info?
Well, there's a website for the book called skyfaring.com, like seafaring but with sky. And it's available, I think, from most bookshops. At the website, there's also a gallery of photos that I've taken from the window seat of the passenger cabin, and also a bunch of photos that readers have submitted, mostly from the UK so far, because that's where the book was published first. But if any of your listeners have any window seat shots that they'd like to add to the gallery, I would really I'd love to see them.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine. For more information on Aviation Consumer, log on to www.aviationconsumer.com.